Welcome to Empowering Connections, a podcast by Connie Akins, a licensed professional counselor with a private practice to help you heal your personal and professional relationships through counseling advice, tips, and ideas. Empowering Connections will focus on healthy ways to improve these relationships, help you manage your stress, and attain a better sense of self-fulfillment.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. Today I have a special guest with me. His name is Raynard Meredith. He is a local counselor. He has a private practice in Southfield, Michigan. And Raynard is one of my favorite guests to Empowering Connections. He has been on episode number 10, episode 40, and episode 46. All of those are about relationships and helping people to heal. And Raynard, I really appreciate you coming back again to the Empowering Connections podcast.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure to be back.
Awesome. I get really good feedback when you're on the show, so I appreciate it. So today, Raynard and I are going to talk about post-traumatic stress disorder. And the reason we're going to talk about that is because people always run around talking about mental health conditions like PTSD or bipolar. And we're not going to talk about that one today, but we may do a future one on that. And they don't understand what they're saying. And so Raynard is going to inform, enlighten, and give us knowledge about post-traumatic stress disorder. So we're just going to start with the very basics. Raynard, what is post-traumatic stress disorder?
So post-traumatic stress disorder is, of course, one of the, you know, Axis One diagnoses that we experience or that we can diagnose with. Post-traumatic stress disorder is going to be a disorder in which a person has experienced some life-altering event that actually either threatened their safety, took away their ability to feel safe or feel secure. And so when you look at it from that perspective, the person experiences this. But just because you experience this does not mean you absolutely have to have post-traumatic stress disorder. So you experience this life-altering or this life-threatening event in your life, or this critically, clinically significant event in your life. And once you experience it, you start to develop symptoms from that. And those symptoms can include, you know, things such as increased paranoia, difficulty with sleeping. So you have like anxiety or depression, hypervigilance, sleep disruptions, eating disruptions, and things of that nature. But you also have that desire to repress those memories or thoughts pertaining to that that event that threatened your safety or threatened your, you know, your sense of security. And you do things to try to actually avoid even coming in contact with things that may remind you of that event. You may, for example, if you get into like a car accident, you become traumatized from that car accident, you may find yourself like avoiding coming in contact with that road again. Some people may even have difficulty getting back behind the wheel of a car if they were behind the wheel of a car when they got into the car accident. Also, too, another key thing with post-traumatic stress disorder, you're going to see people having flashbacks. And those are kind of like very vivid dreams while you're awake, making you seem or feel like you're back in that same moment all over again, whether it's 5 years from now, 10 years from now, you know, within the next month after that event, you'll actually begin to have flashbacks and it'll feel like you're right back into that same life-altering, threatening event all over again. And so when you have those things, that's when being traumatized transforms over to being post-traumatic stress disorder.
Okay, wow. So traumatic events can have a significant impact on one's psyche, on one's ability to manage current situations based on past experiences is what I'm hearing you say. And also, when you think about traumatic events that people have experienced, you named a very common one, a car accident. There's other events associated with PTSD. And can you give us a couple more examples?
Absolutely. So when we hear that diagnosis of PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, our mind naturally goes to events such as war vets, army, overseas, you know, hand-to-hand combat. But what we fail to realize is that you can have PTSD from everyday things that occur in life, like, you know, like a car accident or a child witnessing domestic violence in their home, being physically attacked and bullied at school, witnessing just any major life event that threatens a house fire. A person can have PTSD, experiencing multiple events that are, you know, really resembling of being in kind of almost like the hood or, you know, lower socioeconomic status life events, a lot of drug deals, seeing people being murdered or killed, or even having a gun pulled on you, being robbed yourself. In the training that I do, I break it down and I begin to explain and show people that a person can have PTSD from things that we might find very insignificant. So let's say you have a prized possession that a family member gave you and that family member is deceased. So this has a high value to you. And maybe somebody steals it from you, or like a kid having their blankie taken away from them. That can be traumatic to them. If that provided them with security and safety and that gets taken away from them out of their control, anything can definitely trigger a person to have PTSD. It's really any life event that takes away your ability to feel safe and secure, and it causes you to have these symptoms that we discussed just a moment ago.
Okay.
But it can be anything.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So tell me, how common is PTSD?
Absolutely. So PTSD is very common. It's actually more common than we would think, because we oftentimes classify PTSD as it only impacting people who are in the Army or the Marines or who were involved in some type of war or combat. But it's really, I don't have the statistic numbers, but it's really common. A lot of children suffer from PTSD. And here's the thing, is that because of those symptoms of PTSD, a lot of times kids get diagnosed with ADHD when they really should be diagnosed with PTSD. Because in PTSD, think about it, if you're in a classroom setting, or even if you are an adult and you're at work and you're having a flashback, it's going to be really hard to focus. You're going to be staring out the window, or you're going to have like this glazed look. It's going to be really hard to focus. You're going to have a lot of anxiety. So that may be giving you a lot of energy, as well as you might have some hypervigilance, which is like being on the defense a lot. And those things, especially in kids, will look like ADHD symptoms, but it really may be PTSD. And the same thing with adults. A lot of adults get misdiagnosed with, you know, bipolar depression and all of these other things when it may be PTSD.
Okay.
So it's really, really common.
Okay. So my research says that 3.6% of the U.S. adult population actually has PTSD. So that's about 9 million people. And 37% of those diagnosed with PTSD have severe symptoms. And it also says that women are significantly more likely to experience PTSD. And so one of the things I thought about in terms of women experiencing PTSD, is that women may have been victimized either by assault, which could be either a physical assault or sexual assault. And that may be a contributing factor to why they might experience post-traumatic stress disorder. And it's just interesting, the statistics, because that's a lot of people, 3.6% of the population. And we don't know when we see people experiencing certain symptoms whether or not they actually are suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder.
Absolutely. One of the things that I've noticed is that, because I think the number, because PTSD as it pertains to the general population and not pertaining to military, is a rather new construct just within the last 10 years.
Right.
And so I believe it's probably higher than that, because a lot of people who got diagnosed with, these other things where they may have experienced a trauma that offset these things. And so now they got misdiagnosed and they maybe left treatment, or they never, went back to treatment to get an update on their diagnosis. And so I believe the numbers could actually be higher just because of how new that diagnosis is to being applied to general population versus just military population.
Absolutely. I believe you're right, Reynard. Can you talk a little bit more about the symptoms? The symptom maybe of avoidance or cognitive and mood symptoms or arousal symptoms like hypervigilance. I know you mentioned flashback, but are there other things that people can look for to really get a clear understanding of post-traumatic stress disorder?
Absolutely, 100%. One of the key things that I look for as a clinician, and it's really easy to spot, outside once you recognize it, when a person is having difficulty talking about a life trauma or a life event, they often really avoid it. And so when the topic comes up, they'll say things such as, I don't want to talk about that. Or when it comes up or something reminds them of it, they'll hurry up and if it's something on TV, they'll turn the television off because they don't want to dive into those feelings again, or to those thoughts, as well as those pathways that are triggering for them. And even when they are ready to process and talk about it, when they talk about it, they become physiologically distressed. So the hands may start to shake. They may, start to hyperventilate. They may start crying, legs shaking, becoming really, really unsettled in their body. And nothing has happened to them at that moment besides bringing up the topic of their trauma. With kids, they'll oftentimes, when I worked in a community mental health agency, when kids and teenagers would come in and they would have post-traumatic stress disorder, they oftentimes, when it came to talking about the trauma, they would divert to their parent and tell their parents, you talk about it, I got to step out of the room. They don't want to be present when that topic comes up because of how it triggers their body to feel like they're back into that moment again. Other things too, a huge portion of people who have substance abuse problems, substance abuse challenges, they most likely have some PTSD probably going on there, because with the alcohol, marijuana, or other drugs does, it helps them to numb out of those emotions and those feelings and those thoughts. They're able to suppress those and not deal with the reality of it. And then again, some of the other common things are sleep disruptions, where they're sleeping a lot or it's not sleeping enough, suicidal ideations a person may begin to experience. And for children, as well as some adults, but I've seen it more prevalent in children, having hallucinations. Mm. Children will oftentimes have, when they have PTSD, they'll have hallucinations, whether it's auditory or visual, meaning that they hear something that other people can't hear, or they see things that other people can't see. But adults and children, they may have frequent nightmares about the event that they experience. But the one key thing with children, I find, is that when children have PTSD and they have nightmares, their nightmares will either be about the actual event, or they'll start to have nightmares about monsters coming to get them. Their dreams will frequent around the themes of monsters. And those are, some usual things pertaining to, PTSD. There's some, there's other things, again, the hypervigilance. So let's say if I'm a person who was physically attacked, or I witnessed domestic violence in my home, or I was physically or sexually abused. When I see signs that somebody else may be going through that, I may cast caution to the wind and immerse myself into that situation without thinking about the cause or the impact that it would have on my own life and my own safety. So that person who overly protects others, jumping in, you know, an example that I can think of is a person who may see a domestic dispute occurring, and before they think about the fact that they have their kids with them, they jump in and get into it, and they just can't really let it go. Like, they're continuously in this mode of every time they see something that looks like injustice, they are responding at the level of 10, and the situation may only cost for like a 3. So that's what that hypervigilance is, overly being vigilant towards certain issues that look like their trauma.
That's a very good example, Raynard. And I think that when people have PTSD, they get that that fight or flight response. They either want to avoid, like you said, the situation totally, or they want to jump in and do something, like you said. And sometimes just don't know how to help without them seeking treatment.
Absolutely.
So one of the things I wanted to ask you is, how is PTSD treated?
So PTSD is treated with, you would usually see PTSD combined with the treatment of CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy, and most recently, TFCBT, trauma-focused cognitive behavioral therapy. That's an evidence-based practice that is really popular right now. You'll also see PTSD being treated with EMDR, the eye movement desensitization reprocessing format. You'll see a lot of clinicians using that, but the most common process of you treating PTSD is just going to be your person-centered treatment, that, you know, that psychotherapy of talk therapy, them being able to talk and tell their story. And then with each one of those is really going to be the component of the retelling of their story, but also giving them psychoeducation on how trauma and PTSD symptoms impact their daily life, and then giving them coping skills to manage those symptoms when they become distressed. But yeah, the EMDR, recently the brain spotting, and then also to your, that, you know, the psychotherapy of just regular talk therapy, those are going to be the main treatments. And for people who, because when you have PTSD, you also can have anxiety and depression to go along with that. If the anxiety and depression is too debilitating, they may recommend seeing a psychiatrist for psychotropic medication to treat those symptoms of anxiety and depression. Because people with PTSD can oftentimes be more likely to experience panic attacks and things of that nature.
Absolutely.
As well as for hallucinations.
Okay. And is there anything special that a family member can do if their loved one is experiencing PTSD?
Absolutely. The first thing that I would say do is, one, if you think your family member or your spouse or just anybody, your friend, is experiencing PTSD, the first thing that I would say to do is to, one, just be open and empathetic with them and understand that what they're going through is not just in their head, that this is something that is real. And from their perspective, when they become triggered at that moment, this is their reality. So really being able to empathize with them. And then two, I would say, educate yourself on what PTSD is and how to be a support to them. And then last but not least, of course, always, always, always recommend them to get some type of professional help. You know, somebody who was trained, skilled, and has some type of, have the certifications and the qualifications to be able to professionally and effectively treat PTSD. That's how I would go about doing it if one of my family members. Empathy, education, or psychoeducation, and getting them into treatment.
Absolutely. Thank you, thank you, thank you so much for enlightening and informing the audience today. Raynard, where can people follow you or find you?
Absolutely. You can find me on Instagram. I am on Instagram up under Raynard the Counselor. You can find me on Therapy for Black Men up under my name, just Raynard Meredith. That's R-A-Y-N-A-R-D. And if you type that in, there's not very many Raynards out there, so you'll most likely get me. As well as I'm on Facebook. My Facebook is more professional, but there is a little bit of personal side to me. But if you want strictly professional things, follow me on Instagram at Raynard the Counselor. That's the counselor is traditional spelling on Instagram.
All right. Thank you so much for joining me today.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
The Empowering Connections podcast is not intended to replace the need for a professional counseling relationship. This podcast does not constitute professional advice or counseling services. As always, if you need mental health services, please seek a qualified mental health provider. You can find Connie Akins on the websites Psychology Today and Therapy for Black Girls. If you have an iTunes or Spotify account, please subscribe, share, and continue to listen. Feel free to check out Connie Akins' website at www.empoweringserenity.net and follow Connie on Instagram at ConnieAkinsLPC. You may not edit, modify, or redistribute this podcast. We appreciate you listening to the Empowering Connections podcast and providing feedback. Stay positive.